to Slumber Party. I'm DJ Star.
And I'm DJ Coco. Just going to introduce that last song because I love it so much. So that one was called Go Getter by Necking from their album Cut Your Teeth. These guys are pretty special. We've played them before as well because they played at Studio 6 here at CJSF a couple of years ago. I think it was about 5 years ago. But yeah, it's like a Vancouver... They're labeled as a punk band, but I believe that they are what I'd consider modern Riot Girl because their lyrics touch on a lot of the same topics that Riot Girl typically encompasses. But anyway, great band. Go check out the rest of their album. Boss is pretty good as well. But the next one up you'll be hearing is also pretty good. This one's called Sometimes by Mannequin Pussy and from their album I Got Heaven. And they played at Sled Island in Alberta, which is this music festival that happened, I think, earlier this year. And the lead singer got interviewed on an open mic here at CJSF as well. So extra promo, but hope you enjoy this one. This is CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby Community Radio from Simon Fraser University. You are tuning into Slumber Party, and I'm DJ Coco.
And I'm DJ Star.
We are back from our little break. Just introduced the song already before, but you just heard Sometimes by Mannequin Pussy. Great band, great song. But now we're going to go back into the Riot Girl conversation. So we're going to talk a little bit about you can say controversy, but...
Or some of the issues, at least, within it, despite it being a great feminist thing that was promoting a lot of autonomy and self-sufficiency for women. It definitely did not do that for all women.
Yeah. And just want to preface before we start, I took a couple notes from this opinion piece from this girl named Emmanuel Muputhi. So thank you for her for me referencing some of her work. She has a great site voicing some of her opinions, so I really like them. So I'm gonna reference a little of those. But
I was reading this woman, Addie Schrode's thesis paper, actually, and it's called The Race Riot Within and Without the Girl One, Ethno-Racial Girl Zine's Tactical Construction of Space.
Construction of Space.
It was pretty informative, so you guys should honestly check it out and read it.
Mm-hmm.
It is 124 pages, though, so
124?
I didn't read all of it yet, but
okay,
it's interesting.
Anyways, just to give super quick rundown, Riot Girl is a type of music genre that encompasses politics, feminism, and music, and kind of empowers women. But it was kind of a genre and a movement that really had an emphasis and dominated by white, urban, middle-class young women. And so this kind of got a bad rep from the media. And so this was kind of where the issues came in, because number one,
or at least the modern media,
media. But I feel like it's, as before, they were labeled as pretty radical. They're misandrists, saying that they hated men, even though they didn't. And saying
that they're
violent.
Typical for raising any kind of issue against what men perpetuate is just being labeled as, you know, a man hater, when it's really just like, oh,
just like we want
I hate
equality.
That this happens actually,
like. We want more women in a male-dominated field, but then that's misandry. So, anyways, this movement was kind of more criticized because it was the fact that it was only relatable for close common experiences for womanhood, but only for white women and the woman who dominated and led this movement. So, for example, not that this is terrible, but a lot of the famous bands, and I feel like the reason why the movement gained so much traction was the forefront of having these white women and using white privilege to gain popularity, such as like La Tigre, mm-hmm. Bikini Kill, Bratmobile. They were all white women, and unfortunately, even though they didn't mean to, it kind of discluded people of are women of color and trans women. So
yeah, I think when I was reading that thesis paper, she highlighted a big issue was that Riot Girls often use this umbrella term of gender as like the all being force that they are like fighting against. They used a lot of binary kind of constructions, I guess. Mm-hmm. So they focused on like girl, boy, the patriarchy versus woman, like all these things that kind of, it really did erase the issues and experiences of women of color, because it was just kind of just saying like, okay, it's girl versus boy, you know, just like that. And it invisibilizes a lot of other marginalized identities.
Like the smaller issues that, like having white privilege, would you say?
I think it was more like they're not leaving any room or space to talk about race or like gender identity as much, instead of just positioning it as girl versus boy.
Right.
They're not really like looking at the nuances.
It's more black and white kind of.
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. I feel that even though it's kind of difficult, because technically we are like two white presenting people.
I mean, I'm white.
Yeah, I would just say I look white. So it's a bit awkward to talk about topics like
but
this.
They
but
they need to be talked
about. It's
for
good
sure.
For visibility and everything. But I feel like having the dominance, I feel like if I was a woman of color and I saw a movement that, even though it tried to go into the punk scene and go like attack at this male dominated field, like that's great, but having it all led by women and have mostly issues that particularly these white middle class woman face, I feel like I would be barred if they didn't mention those ideas.
I mean, it kind of does just reflect what white women were facing in the punk scene, like, oh, this is punk music by men made for men. Mm-hmm. And then it just turned out to be like punk music made by white women for white women, and there wasn't really a lot of wiggle room between that.
Yeah.
I know Riot Girls tried to do anti-racist measures as it was part of their philosophy. Like, they tried to hold workshops around unlearning racism. But many white girls were very, like, comfortable in the scene and didn't feel like there was a need to change anything about it, which is kind of, you know, tyranny of the majority. Like, if most people are okay with the circumstances, like, the more marginalized groups will suffer because of that if they're not being acknowledged or heard right. in any way. So those kinds of measures weren't super effective.
Yeah. So, like, maintaining the status quo would be kind of inherently...
Yeah,
barring.
It's kind of ironic because that the whole thing is that they're trying to be, like, against the status quo, but wouldn't really face certain, like, racist ideologies that they have been conditioned into thinking because of the status quo. Like, you know, I think it's kind of the mindset that some people get. If you're already facing some sort of oppression in any way, like, you're gonna be like, oh, like, I couldn't really say anything wrong because I understand what it's like to be oppressed, but you really don't in that way. You know?
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, I would say that also diverging a bit from that, I feel like there's also other things that are other factors that deterred people of color, especially black women, from entering Riot Girl. There was always that 1800s trope from TV and media. I feel like it's pretty commonly known as, like, the angry black woman trope, and so it's labeling black women as unhinged or confrontational, dominant, bitter, abusive. And so I feel like if they were to enter into that Riot Girl scene, they would just get that double label of, like, oh, you hate men, and then you're also confrontational and you're unhinged and things. And it's just that intersectionality of two labels that is another deterrent from entering and being in the inclusive, well, to the white woman movement of Riot Girl.
Yeah, and I think that is, like, a very good example of the kind of problem that Riot Girl would not acknowledge, like, that mm-hmm. kind of the tropes that, or stereotypes that other groups go through that still relate to gender but are also diverge in the sense of race.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, they, I don't think they mean to inherently, but it's just
but how some of them were definitely racist.
Some of them could have been, sure. Yeah, but mm-hmm. overall, I think they still tried their best, but it was just the way the movement worked.
Like, the leader of Bikini Kill, Kathleen Hanna, was very advocating for anti-racism, but, mm-hmm. you know, when there is that, when a subculture gets big enough, it still will reflect some aspects of mainstream culture, and I think in a subculture full of white people, like white women or white men, there is still going to be the influence of racism, for sure.
Yeah, and I would say also that I feel like this, I think I said this before, but this movement wouldn't have been as strong if it was run, like, led by women of color, because things like, first, another specific example, in the 1990s, there's this term called girl power. I think we've all heard of it. It was on TV show, or, like, it was on lunch containers, it was on t-shirts, it was in the media and the radio, and it was coined by Spice Girls, it's the trend by this guy, like, the Spice Girls, but then it was coined by Bikini Kill first. But it used a lot of these white women as key figures, such as, like, Pink,
Avril Lavigne.
I cannot pronounce anything today, but mm-hmm. and then Gwen Stefani, women like that. And even though there's still nothing wrong against this, I go girl power. But I don't think that comparing this to the underground movement, like, I feel like the girl power was really more mainstream because it was led by these white women and not women of color. And so same with the Riot Girl movement, like, how popular could have it become if this was led by people, like, by women of color? So
Yeah, I think that is, they definitely do face a lot more issues trying to get acknowledged for their music, and especially since I think there is also, like, being a woman in punk, first of all, but then also being a black mm-hmm. woman in punk is, like, just another, like, Corey, or, like, DJ Coco was saying, just an added problem you have to face. But there was, however, even despite all of this, black women and women of color still have a big place in punk today. We're going to play some music like the Linda Lindas. Mm-hmm. We already played Mannequin Pussy and also Skinny Girl Die. There's, like, if you do some research, there's a lot of bands out there. But if we're going historical more, there were these events called Sista Girl Riots, and they were directly a response to the oversaturation of middle-class white women in the punk and Riot Girl community. And some Riot Girls just left that community completely because of those problems, and they didn't have any other space to express themselves except with each other. So then these Sista Girl Riots were created in the 90s by Tamar Kelly Brown, Simi Stone, Honeychild Coleman, and Maya Sakura. So they kind of had this idea of punk shows made by black women for black women. So it created a community that was even counter to the counterculture.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah, it's so cool. Like, they challenged the idea that punk was reserved for white people in any sense, like Riot Girl or mainstream punk.
But the thing is, because I've never heard of that too, so then I feel like that further implies
Yeah, maybe you've never heard of it, but I think the mainstream media has a lot to do with that, like how what they deem as important or not important to talk about, or where, like, the most drama is.
Mm-hmm.
And this seemed like a really positive thing, which also the mainstream media doesn't love to talk about positive things in general. All I know is that it was very foundational for the current black alternative scene, which is also known as Afropunk, and many of the founding members still participate in it. So
that's good.
It's good to know about.
Good to know that. But yeah, overall, Riot Girl, even though the idea made sense and it was great to get women into the punk scene, I feel like it got really polarized by the mass media and it kind of fell apart, because we still hear about some Riot Girl bands today, but they label themselves more as just punk. For example, there's this one specific, I'd say Riot Girl band, but they call themselves a punk band, but they say that they follow Riot Girl inspiration from, like, Bikini Kill and Bratmobile, and they also make their own zines every month and take them out. So I just have a specific example because I think they're pretty cool. I listen to them a lot. They're called Soft Cult, and so we love some Canadian representation on our community radio. So these guys, they're twin sisters from Ontario. So this is Phoenix and Mercedes Armhorn, and they have this EP called See You in the Dark. Pretty good. I really like that one. There's a specific song called Drain. And these, I would say that these are pretty, I think, these are Riot Girl songs, because they touch on issues that the Riot Girl culture does. And so this song kind of touches on human impact on the climate, or on the earth, impacting for climate change. Yeah, and then they also have their monthly zines. It's called Scripture, and they started it about a couple years ago, and really reinforces the messages behind their songs. But not only Soft Cult, but you can also listen to other current Riot Girl bands. There's lots of women of color now, which is great. There's, like, Princess Bree, the Linda Lindas, Upchuck, Hazy and the Scouts, and Pussy Riot, which are some of our favorites, so... Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think we are coming to the end of our program now. We have about 10 minutes left, so I just think we should wrap up our conversation about Riot Girl, like, with some final thoughts.
We're gonna do our final thoughts.
For me, I feel like even though it was, like, the term Riot Girl is very much connected to the time in the 90s, the fact that we still have songs talking about the same issues and repeating the same things, and I know all of these problems that Riot Girls were talking about still fully exist today, with, and especially, like, with the influx of, like, Trad Wives and Andrew Tate and stuff. Like, we need this so badly. Yeah. This autonomous mentality for women, just reclaiming our space and our relationships with other women, and you know, that is really healing. So that's how I feel. We need Riot Girl still. Maybe an improved version, but yeah.
I definitely agree. It's too bad that the movement kind of went to the direction it did. Not terrible. They weren't inherently racist or inherently trying to do these things, but I believe that we can take inspiration from what they're trying to do, and it's nice to have like a more creative outlet to express these thoughts. Kind of like a really heavy metal version of poetry, kind of, is how I think of it. But mm-hmm. Yeah, anything done by a woman, great. Keep going. So that's all my thoughts.
Anything ever done by a woman, girl bossing to the max. Oh god.
Anyways, I think that's the end of our little wrap up. But we also have Siobhan, who's still listening.
She's been listening into this whole spiel. She's been here the whole time. But
yeah, you guys did a great job.
Thank you. Thank you.
We appreciate it.
We appreciate you. Okay.
Go women.
Go women.
Go women. That's the moral of the story.
All women. Okay.
Even the terrible woman. It's okay.
Even the terrible. I don't know about that. I don't know about that.
Joking, guys.
Okay. So, we're at the end of the hour-ish, kind of. But we're just going to check out. So mm-hmm. The next show is going to be Revolution Rock at 7 p.m. And then we have Bitcoover at 8 p.m. with our music coordinator, Connor. So stick around for that. But yeah, thank you so much for joining us this week. And we're going to do this song. We're going to do Drain by Soft Cult, which is what I kind of talked about. And it touches on climate change. So take a couple listen to the lyrics. But anyway,
bye.
Enjoy. Yeah.
See you guys next week, Tuesdays at 6 p.m.